Hi, everybody. I'm Tom Hall. Glad you're with us for Midday. Today, the final conversation in our series examining the legacy of President Barack Obama. How have young people, gay people, women, veterans, workers, and others fared during a presidential tenure that was often marked by implacable partisanship? Will any of Obama's initiatives in health care, immigration, and climate change survive an incoming administration that will control both the executive and legislative branches? Michael Days is the editor of the Philadelphia Daily News. His new book is called Obama's Legacy, What He Accomplished as President. He joins me along with Liz Copeland, the founder and president of the Urban Conservative Project. Then, theater critic J. Wynn Russick stops by for her Thursday theater review. Today, she'll tell us about The Call of the Wild at the Theater Project in Baltimore. That's all coming up on Midday, right after these headlines. And good afternoon, everybody. So glad you are with us from Midday on 88.1 WIPR. I'm Tom Hall. Today, we conclude our look at the legacy of President Barack Obama, who leaves office tomorrow at this hour, when Donald Trump is sworn in as the 45th president of the United States. Just 2 years ago, a Trump presidency was an unimaginable possibility for almost everybody, including those who came to support him in the election, although Mr. Trump himself has talked about running since the 1980s. And after 8 years of Barack Obama's sometimes tumultuous tenure, it's easy to forget just how unimaginable his presidency was until about June of 2008, when, after a long and tenacious primary battle with Hillary Clinton, he became the nominee of the Democratic Party. In the general election that fall, he offered a stark contrast to the sitting president, George W. Bush, and in an election that he framed around the theme of change, he entered office after his victory with an 80% approval rating, promising to unite the red states and blue states into the United States. Well, that didn't exactly happen. His signature piece of legislation, the Affordable Care Act, passed both houses of Congress without a single vote from a member of the Republican Party. Calls to repeal it began almost immediately. Donald Trump has promised to heed that call as soon as he can. Entrenched partisanship has hovered over most of the initiatives that Mr. Obama has championed. But despite fierce opposition and substantial local and national legislative gains by Republicans, the political and cultural landscape of the United States has changed dramatically during Mr. Obama's tenure. A ban on embryonic stem cell research was lifted. A Latina was appointed to the Supreme Court. A bill to tighten oversight of Wall Street, marriage equality, troops in Iraq and Afghanistan reduced by tens of thousands. But civilian suffering in Syria, a frost enveloping our relationship with Israel, police misconduct grabbing headlines in cities across the country, and an electorate that is perhaps even more polarized than ever before are also part of the legacy of this president whose election was historic and whose lasting impact will not be able to be fully assessed for many years. That's not stopping us, however, this afternoon. This week, we've been talking to scholars, journalists, and political observers about President Obama's record of achievement and his failures. Joining us today from WHYY in Philadelphia is Michael Days. He's the editor of the Philadelphia Daily News, the first African-American to lead that paper in its 90-year history. His new book is called Obama's Legacy, What He Accomplished as President. Mr. Days, welcome to Midday.
Well, thank you for having me on.
Glad to have you here. And joining me here in Studio A is an astute observer of all things political and a frequent guest on our program, Liz Copeland. She is the founder and president of the Urban Conservative Project. Last spring, she ran in the Republican primary for the Baltimore City Council in the 1st District. Liz, it is always a pleasure. Welcome
back.
Thanks
for having me. Thank you.
And you are welcome to join us with your thoughts about Barack Obama as he concludes his 8-year stewardship of the highest office in the land. 410-662-8780 is our phone number. Our email address is midday@wipr.org and our Twitter handle @MiddayTomHall. So, Mr. Days and Liz, I want to play a little bit of Barack Obama's inauguration address after his first election. This is in January of 2009.
That we are in the midst of crisis is now well understood. Our nation is at war against a far-reaching network of violence and hatred. Our economy is badly weakened, a consequence of greed and irresponsibility on the part of some, but also our collective failure to make hard choices and prepare the nation for a new age. Homes have been lost, jobs shed, businesses shuttered. Our health care is too costly, our schools fail too many, and each day brings further evidence that the ways we use energy strengthen our adversaries and threaten our planet. Today, I say to you that the challenges we face are real. They are serious and they are many. They will not be met easily or in a short span of time. But know this, America, they will be met.
Barack Obama in his first inaugural address back in January of 2009. Mr. Days, it's a striking part of that inauguration speech. Those are the things that Mr. Obama identified as his challenges at the time. How do you think overall he's met those challenges?
Well, I think on the domestic front, he's done fairly well. And I always start talking about what he was handed on that first day when he put his hand on that Bible. It was an economy that was in free fall. You know, we were losing thousands of jobs monthly. Unemployment rate was rising. The car industry was in collapse. And so that was really the initial challenge. And, of course, he also took on the Affordable Care Act. And, you know, I'm one of those who would argue that it may be called a number of things over the next 5 years, 10 years, whatever, but it will survive in some form or another because it is something that people need and it's something that presidents going back to Teddy Roosevelt were endorsing and pushing for without much success.
And Liz Copeland, what strikes me about that is its parallels to much of what Donald Trump campaigned on this past time, because that was a very harsh and negative assessment of how we're doing. What surprised a lot of people about Mr. Trump's approach to his campaign was that things really weren't that bad at all. I mean, compared to what they were in 2009, economically, unemployment at 10%, the stock market went down just a couple months after that speech to 6,000. It's now knocking on 20,000. Many more people have health insurance than ever had before. But Mr. Trump is saying we need to make America great again, and that was clearly a message that resonated. What's your reaction to listening to the president back in 2009 and his take on where we were and then where we are now?
It's interesting that you would ask that question. In 2009, I was a registered Democrat, and I recall feeling so much pride, and Barack Obama represented not just the audacity of hope, of course, I'm quoting the title of his book, but change and tolerance, inclusion, and the example of achieving the American dream in spite of where you start in life. And so when I hear that speech now, I recognize where his mandate from the American people empowered him, and his thoughtful approach to policy really provided the shift in the conversation. But the policies were moving away from a moderate approach to public policy, and were moving further and further towards the left. And the Republicans called him out on that, the cost of Affordable Care Act, just the notion that we were going to have the Recovery Act, where some estimation is that it was 50 times the cost of the New Deal. And those things, they saved the auto industry bailout. Yes, they saved that industry. The Recovery Act helped people receive benefits, unemployment benefits longer, and he really helped people. And like you said, 20 million uninsured people were able to not just have access to health care, as some of conservative legislators are saying now with the repeal and replace adage, but people received health care, and that was significant. But when I think about that, I realize that, you know, we paid a cost for that as Americans, and the Democratic Party paid a cost for that. You talk about the number of Republican governors that are controlling states in the country.
It's, 33 it's, of these days.
Yes, yeah. Yes. It's, well, 33 Republican governors, and the GOP has both houses and the governor's mansion, the governor's house in 50, almost 50% of the states in the country, and 69 out of 99 legislative chambers across the country, the Republican Party now control. And so that was, in my opinion, that was either a backlash or it was the outcome of Barack Obama's presidency. And that that I would classify as a failure. His embodiment and his presentation of these liberal ideals and the good that he did for the American people had a devastating effect on the Democratic Party.
Let me play for Mr. Days. I'm sorry. Go ahead.
Mike, please. Well, I guess I'd say that, you know, people are marching all across the country from sea to shining sea in support of the Affordable Care Act. And folks are meeting with their Republican Congress folks all across the country saying that they want the Affordable Care Act retained. In fact, they want it tweaked, but they don't want it thrown out. So I would really push back against that strongly in that people weren't saying a whole lot about it over the last couple, 3 years. But now that it appears that they might lose their benefits, they're responding quite loudly.
Right. You have to admit that most of the people in the American public, myself included, may not know all of the details of risk pooling and may not completely understand all of the intentions of the Affordable Care Act. But we get that people deserve health care and they deserve access to quality health care. But unfortunately, the battle cry from many malcontents in the country was heard by Donald Trump. And that was a campaign promise. And the American people delivered through the Electoral College, the Office of the Presidency, and I can guarantee you that the Affordable Care Act, as we know it, will be repealed. That's why. What we replace
but
it with will
be repealed.
Yeah, so it, dump it. You know, that's very
but
crude
dump it
and simplistic.
What we're hearing now is 2020, well after the midterm election.
Exactly. And that's done by design. It's done by design. But they can say, I'm sorry, I don't mean to cut you off, but let me just get this point out. They can say, and I mean they, that the Republican Congress can say, we did it. We repealed. We passed this. We repealed it. Check that box. Now, what does that do for everyone else that's walking around here who says, oh, I love Kentucky care, but I don't like that Obamacare? Well, that's the state's block grant's decision to, you know, have an exchange and they renamed it something else. There's a lot of misinformation. And I don't know
and
if
Mr.
the march.
And Mr. Trump, in his characteristic confidence, has said we're going to replace it with something better.
Because he wants insurance for everyone, which is a single payer or universal health care. And that is not consistently
Exactly. And this remains to be seen how he's going to retain the things about it that he says he likes, like insuring your 26-year-old for a few years after she's out of college, disqualifying people for pre-existing conditions. I mean, it does remain to be seen. One would think that over the last 6 years, as the bill has been put into place, that if there were big ideas about how best to do those things that weren't in the Affordable Care Act, we would have heard from the Republicans now.
Well, there's a decision that's being made. Does everyone receive health care? It's not do they have access to health care, but does everyone receive health care? And that's a decision that the American people need to decide.
Mr. Days and Liz, let me play you. We just heard a little bit from the president's first speech as president. Now I want to play a clip from his last speech, the farewell speech that he delivered in Chicago last week.
If I had told you 8 years ago that America would reverse a great recession, reboot our auto industry, and unleash the longest stretch of job creation in our history, if I had told you that we would open up a new chapter with the Cuban people, shut down Iran's nuclear weapons program without firing a shot, take out the mastermind of 9/11, if I had told you that we would win marriage equality and secure the right to health insurance for another 20 million of our fellow citizens, if I had told you all that, you might have said our sights were set a little too high. But that's what we did.
And Mr. Days, it's interesting to hear what the president outlined as the big challenges when he took office and then what he outlined as his big successes when he's leaving office. Do you think he's getting credit from the American people for the things that he has accomplished? He's leaving office with a 60% approval rating, and that ranks him among the highest approval ratings of recent presidencies.
Well, I think he's getting the credit now. And I think if there's a really one fault in the Obama administration in terms of they did a really poor job, I think, in marketing what they were getting done and communicating what they were getting done to the to the public. The other thing is, you know, while there are more jobs, and I think you have to give him his due in terms of the increase in the number of the jobs over many, many years, you know, the marketplace has changed dramatically. And people who had jobs, had factory jobs that took care of themselves and their family, find themselves more increasingly with more minimum wage jobs and working a couple of jobs. And I think that's what a lot of the American public has been reacted to in the November election.
Michael Days is the editor of the Philadelphia Daily News. His new book is called Obama's Legacy, What He Accomplished as President. Liz Copeland is the founder and president of the Urban Conservative Project here in Baltimore, a coalition of conservatives living in cities who disagree with both the far left and the far right of the political spectrum. We'll have more with Michael Days and Liz Copeland on the legacy of Barack Obama when we return. We hope you'll join our conversation. 410-662-8780. Our email address, midday@wipr.org, and our Twitter handle, @MiddayTomHall. Glad you're with us. Stick around.
You're listening to your NPR news station, 88.1 WYPR.
And welcome back to Midday. I'm Tom Hall. Looking ahead to Inauguration Day tomorrow, NPR will bring you live coverage of the inauguration of President Donald Trump. That coverage begins at 10 o'clock tomorrow morning, right after On the Record with Sheila Cast. Coming up later today, theater critic J. Wynn Russick will join us with a review of the new show at the Theater Project. And coming up on Midday Monday, we'll talk with a reporter who covered Donald Trump on the campaign trail and who has been covering the transition. Jenna Johnson of The Washington Post will reflect on Mr. Trump's inaugural address and the events of this inauguration weekend, including the Women's March scheduled to take place on Saturday. And in the next edition of Living Questions, our monthly spotlight on the role of religion in the public sphere, we'll talk about prison ministry and how faith can touch the lives of men and women behind bars. That's all coming up on Midday Monday. If you've just joined us today, we are concluding our series of discussions about the Obama administration's hits and misses with Michael Days, the editor of the Philadelphia Daily News. His new book is called Obama's Legacy, What He Accomplished as President. He joins us from the studios of WHYY in Philadelphia. Liz Copeland is the founder and president of the Urban Conservative Project here in Baltimore, a coalition of conservatives living in cities who disagree with both the far left and the far right of the political spectrum. You can join our conversation as well, 410-662-8780, our email address, midday@wypr.org, and our Twitter handle, @MiddayTomHall. I want to speculate a little bit, or ask you to speculate a little bit, Mr. Days, about what kind of a former president of the United States Barack Obama will be. Your book touts the achievements. The subtitle is What He Accomplished as President, and you go through progress that was made on behalf of young people and women and African-Americans, the LGBT community, immigrants, the disabled, the elderly, veterans, prisoners, workers. You go through a list of the things that are now either by legislation or by executive order in place to help those groups. What's your guess as to the kind of things that the president might be involved in when he becomes a former president tomorrow afternoon?
Well, I think he was pretty clear in his farewell address in Chicago that he's really going to care about, if he sees any more indication of voter suppression. That's going to be a big issue for him. I think the Dreamers is going to be a big issue for him. I think anything that infringes on things that he considers part of his legacy, particularly his domestic legacy, and certainly at the top of that list will be the Affordable Care Act. He will have a lot to say. I mean, he said, and I believe him when he says he's going to take a minute to just be quiet and think and reflect and relax. But you can rest assured he's not going to be another Bush. He's not going to just, you know, go away to the ranch and be quiet. That's just not who he is.
Yeah, President Bush certainly has not been on the public stage at all. This is an answer to a question that he gave yesterday at his final news conference. This is a question from Jana Rodriguez from The New York Times as to what he might be involved in.
But there's a difference between that normal functioning of politics, and certain issues or certain moments where I think our core values may be at stake. And for me, at least, I would put in that category efforts to round up kids who have grown up here and, for all practical purposes, are American kids, and send them someplace else. When they love this country, they are our kids' friends and their classmates, and are now entering into community colleges or, in some cases, serving in our military, the notion that we would just arbitrarily or because of politics punish those kids when they didn't do anything wrong themselves, I think would be something that would merit me speaking out.
So Liz Copeland, the president, you know, tried and was not able to move the ball very far on immigration. One of his executive orders was slapped back by the Supreme Court. Do you think it's a good idea for former presidents and for this former president, soon to be former president, to stay on the public stage? Or is Mr. Bush's model perhaps better for a functioning democracy that's been pretty dysfunctional by most assessments over the last several years?
I think that there should be a bit of a hybrid approach. It's interesting that the gentleman America sent to the office of the presidency, to the office of the president, he brought so much hope and change. But then when he got to Washington, D.C., there was a lot of gridlock. And during his presidency, the American people repeatedly polled said that Washington can't get anything done. And I don't know if that was causation or correlation based on Barack Obama's presidency. So I think that, If I were a member of the DNC or a leading member of the Democratic Party, I'm not quite sure that I would want Barack Obama there as far as the party is concerned. When we talk about public policy, he should certainly speak out, as all Americans should do if he sees an issue or injustice that he wants to change. But I'm not sure that the Obama presence is going to be helpful to any of the issues that you talked about because of the fact that we now have such a hard shift in the way Americans are discussing these issues and a difference in approach, not just through Donald Trump's candidacy, but now his presidency. And there's been a hard shift, almost a reward, you know, the winner gets the spoils. I'm not certain that he'll be able to accomplish much without the power of the presidency.
We have email. I'm sorry, Mr. Days, go ahead.
I was going to say, if you look at the popularity rating for the outgoing president versus the incoming president, I think an argument could be made that people do still respect him and do want to hear from him. That's what I would argue.
We have a note from a caller who wishes to go unnamed and not be on the air, who says with 33 state legislatures in Republican control and only 34 needed to amend the Constitution, there's more at risk than Obama's legacy. Mr. Days, when you talk about all the achievements that Mr. Obama can put in his column, the fact of the matter is that even though Mr. Trump didn't win the popular vote by some 3 million votes, even though there were 54% of the people who voted for someone other than Mr. Trump, 40% of people who could have voted for somebody didn't vote. He doesn't come in with a particularly strong mandate, it seems, but it does seem that there's a very high probability of a lot of what Mr. Obama counts among his achievements being reversed.
Well, we will see. I mean, he does come in technically as a Republican president, but I'm not so sure that what we're seeing thus far is that whether the Republicans party and those in the Congress and the Republican president are in line at this point. So, you know, I wish I had a crystal ball. The one thing I do feel strongly about is the Affordable Care Act. I don't think I think it's really going to be very difficult to unbundle that, to take that away from the American public, given what we're seeing and the fact that it affects just about all Americans in one way or the other.
Mr. Days, you are the first African-American editor of the Philadelphia Daily News in the 90-year history of that paper. Liz Copeland is an African-American, very politically involved woman here in Baltimore. Let's talk about race and Mr. Obama's involvement or perhaps lack of involvement, because he's gotten a lot of criticism from members of the African-American intelligentsia, certainly, that he did not do enough about race. You call Mr. Days in your book the address that he delivered at the memorial service for the Emmanuel Nine, the people who were shot so horrendously in that church in Charleston, a pivotal moment on race in the country. Why do you think so?
Well, I think I also argue that he was the counselor in chief. He has the ability to reach across racial lines, and I think sometimes he didn't use it, didn't exhibit it, but that was one of the times where I felt as his presidency continued, he got much more comfortable being a biracial, being an African American who is president. There was no blueprint for the first African American president. I think I did argue, and many people said that he was a bit reticent to talk about race, but through it all, based on the polling through 7-8 years, black folks continued to support him in incredible numbers.
Let's listen to a response that he gave yesterday in his final press conference to April Ryan of the Urban Radio Network, talking about race and the status of race relations here in the United States.
There are a whole bunch of folks who voted for the president-elect because they feel forgotten and disenfranchised. They feel as if they're being looked down on. They feel as if their kids aren't going to have the same opportunities as they did. And you don't want to have an America in which a very small sliver of people are doing really well, and everybody else is fighting for scraps, as I said last week. Because that's oftentimes when racial divisions get magnified, because people think, well, the only way I'm going to get ahead is if I make sure somebody else gets less, somebody who doesn't look like me or doesn't worship in the same place I do. That's not a good recipe for our democracy.
Liz Copeland, one of the criticisms that people do level at the president is that he makes these kinds of equivalencies. You talked about the middle-aged white guy and the problems that he has. This is in his farewell address, being somewhat equivalent to people in cities across America, African-American community who are living, under the shadow of racial and economic injustice. What do you think about making that equivalency? Is that helpful to the conversation about race and the conversation about policy moving forward?
Any conversation about race, I think, is helpful. I think that he honestly said that we thought we were in a post-racial America, and clearly where we thought we were going to be or end up, we are not. And I think that's important. Recent polling shows that Americans believe that race relations are not better now after 8 years of an Obama presidency. And I don't think it's fair for Americans to require the president, because of his race, to be responsible for improving race relations amongst the electorate. That's not fair. But the issues that impact people of color, underrepresented, marginalized populations, that's the approach, in my opinion, that Barack Obama took so that he could improve not just their lot in life, but their standing in America. So when we looked at the actual marriage equality and him lighting up the lighthouse and just his appeal and popular
putting
culture.
Putting up the LGBTQ colors on the White House.
Yes, right. Yes. Putting those colors up. Recall the time where he took the Harvard professor, and who was racially profiled, and the police officer, and they talked about it over
the so-called beer summit.
The beer summit. Yes. And some people argue that that was trivializing a lot of the issues that were happening in the black community. And then we fast forward and we look at Baltimore and what happened here and other communities with race relations and the police. And so the Department of Justice during this administration has done more in regards to race relations, policing, and African-American communities. And that is because of who was in that office, in the Oval Office. But there's more for us to do. And I think it's really up to individuals to pick up where the president left off in his official capacity.
410-662-8780 is the number to call to be part of our conversation here on Midday. Our email address, midday@wipr.org. Our Twitter handle, @MiddayTomHall. Let's go to the phones. Lisa in Baltimore, you want to talk a little bit about Mr. Obama's foreign policy. Welcome to the show.
Yes. I actually beg to differ about this red line that they say that, he let the Syrian president cross. I think that that was a very important moment for Obama when he got those nuclear weapons out of Syria. Because if he didn't get those nuclear weapons...
It was chemical weapons, I believe.
Chemical weapons. I keep saying that. I don't know why. But if he didn't get those chemical weapons out of Syria, and ISIS have gotten hold of them, it would be another story. It doesn't seem like he could do right in anything that he does. And people seem to not see the big picture of getting these chemical weapons out of Syria. I think that was a big accomplishment, and suffering some sort of humility and taking that chance of getting them out and not bombing Syria or not going in on Syria was the best choice, I thought.
Well, thank you for your call. Lisa, Michael Days, you mentioned several foreign policy successes, the START treaty with Russia to reduce the nuclear arsenals back in 2010. What do you think about overall his foreign policy?
There have been some clear successes, and you know, an easy one to mention is Cuba. After all these many years, we have a relationship with Cuba, although there's still a long way to go. But I think in a lot of ways, corporate America has already decided that we're going to have a long-term relationship, given the fact that hotels are going up there, going up in Cuba now, given the fact that cruise lines are now going to Cuba. I think the Middle East, the issues with Israel and Palestine, I mean, that's going to be ongoing, and that's an area where I don't know whether – we'll see. I don't know whether any president can make headway there. Syria, Iran, Afghanistan, I think those are just ongoing discussions. We know now for a fact you just can't pick up all your troops and come home and think things are going to be well, because they're not.
Tom in Baltimore, welcome to Midday with Michael Days and Liz Copeland.
Hi. I had a comment which may sound facetious, but it's not. After Barack Obama's had a chance to cool out for a while, I would love to see him flip the Donald Trump trajectory and be on television. I think Barack Obama would make the most fantastic political talk show host, and it would be unprecedented. Well, gee whiz, we've seen some unprecedented stuff, and I think he'd be brilliant. He's smarter, funnier, has more presence than anybody presently on television. Okay. The other thing, I have a question. I want to ask your panel what they think about whether it's legitimate to say that Barack Obama failed to bring the Democratic Party along with, you know, in terms of his own popularity, or do you feel that the Democratic Party was, if they'd stuck closer to Obama, might have been more successful?
Michael Days, what do you think? Democrats lost both of the midterm elections that occurred during Mr. Obama's two terms. Republicans picked up 60-plus members in Congress. Yeah. What do you think?
Well, my recollection is during the midterms, the Democratic Party really ran from him pretty much. I mean, they picked Hillary came back into the fold, but that was a problem. And there's a part of me that wonders whether we're really moving quickly away from the Democratic Party versus the Republican Party, and that where we are now, and certainly in terms of the presidential race, we are energized by the candidate and not so much by the party. And I think that's not going to fare well for either the Republican Party or the Democratic Party.
Liz Copeland, when it comes to, you know, political activism, to political engagement, I mean, here we have 40-some percent of the country just choosing not to vote. They're registered to vote, but they just sat this election out. Lord knows whether that helped Mr. Trump or Mrs. Clinton one way or the other, although there's a lot of assumption that it helped Mr. Trump more than it helped Secretary Clinton. What do you think about political engagement in this post-Obama-Trump era?
That's a good question. I did want to respond to the foreign policy successes because I wanted to make sure that it's a balanced conversation. There were certain successes, but there were failures as well. And the strength of the Russian government was obvious with the annexation of Crimea under Barack Obama. And yes, you know, Syria removing the chemical weapons was definitely a success. But the disengagement from Iraq actually led the removal of the troops led the foundation or laid a foundation for ISIS to grow, which Barack Barack Obama didn't take seriously at first. He called them JV. And then finally, the relation between ISIS and American safety is clear with the San Bernardino terrorist attacks, the Orlando nightclub, the bombing in September 2016 in New York and in New Jersey, all related to radical Islam, which Obama would not say that this was related to radical Islam. And so those were some of the failures there. Now, as it relates to electoral policies, he inspired a generation not just to vote, but to register. They weren't even registered. And you saw this huge surge. Even in Maryland, there was a significant uptick in voter registration. There were more, I think it was somewhere between 200,000 and 300,000 more people registered to vote in 2008. And turned out there was a drop in 2012. And that the president, the outgoing
president.
But
they didn't turn out in 2010 and 2014 in the midterms.
That is actually correct. But before 2008, 2004 and 2000, they were level. So the 2012 voter turnout was equal to prior 2009 data. So I agree with Mr. Days that it's really Barack Obama and the celebrity of this great orator, this great story, this great person that has personality and has subject matter expertise is unique. I don't think it would be easily replicated. And the Democrats are lucky to have had him because if they hadn't, you know, who knows how many Republican presidents we would have had to date.
Ben from Havre de Grace says, I'm one of those people that thinks the president did the best he could with an uncooperative Congress and a bad set of circumstances. However, I think if he'd listened to the rest of his cabinet advisors instead of to Tim Geithner, he was the Treasury Secretary in the first Obama administration, if he listened to the cabinet instead of Mr. Geithner and called for some scalps when the bailouts were being given, it would have gone a long way towards satisfying the populist anger about them. And it would have taken the wind out of the sails of the Tea Party. Mr. Days, we're going to give you the last word as we finish up here. Is the rise of the Tea Party directly related to the vitriol and the vehemence of opposition to Mr. Obama as an individual?
As an individual who is of color, I think that's what prompted the rise of the Tea Party, I would argue.
Yeah, I think a lot of people feel that as well. Well, that's all the time we have. I appreciate, Mr. Days, your time and your book. And Liz Copeland, it's always good to see you. Thank you both.
Thank you.
Thank you so much.
Michael Days is the editor of the Philadelphia Daily News. His new book is called Obama's Legacy, What He Accomplished as President. Liz Copeland is the founder and president of the Urban Conservative Project, a coalition of centrist conservatives working to address the social and economic challenges facing folks who live in the nation's cities. When we come back after a short break, theater critic J. Wynn Russick joins us with her review of a one-man show that brings Jack London's The Call of the Wild to life on stage. It's Midday. I'm Tom Hall. Stay with us.
I'm so in love with you.
You're listening to your NPR news station, 88.1 WYPR.